Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 78 of Slam Fire Radio for October 10th. 2014. I had to look
at you started
at
struggling, so I was like,
calendar.
Maybe I'll help.
No, my calendar helps me. You don't help me, my calendar helps me.
Of course. In fact, I tried to kind of trip you up. It's the 11th tomorrow, so...
Well, yes, no, tomorrow is the 10th, actually.
See, exactly.
Oh, boy, friend of me. So, hi, everybody. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor the Frelate.
And I'm another one, Matthew the Warrior. No, wait,
and this
that's not
week,
right.
No, this week the Warrior's on assignment.
Yes.
Wait, no, I used that joke last week and earlier this week on Action Shooting Radio.
Oh, well, it's not like we have crossover listeners or anything. And by
no.
me, of course, I mean you, because I don't know why I said we, but that's okay.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Some people email this show thinking they're emailing the other show, Andy. So, yeah. Well, hey, what's going on? Welcome to the show, everybody. Matthew, what have you been up to?
I haven't been up to a whole lot, except for the usual. Actually, a lot of cutting and splitting wood this week, which is definitely a fall activity, but not my favorite fall activity, which is hunting.
Right. So when you said the usual, that's what I thought you were up to, air quotes, you're hunting, which means taking your gun for a walk in the woods.
Right. I've upgraded this year. I'm taking my gun for a drive in the woods. It's been kind of wet this week, so I haven't been doing a whole lot of walking, but I have been doing, take the truck out some old logging trails and stuff and just kind of motored around and looked for stuff. I didn't see anything, though. I haven't gotten anything since last week. Nothing since the opening day, which is kind of depressing, but is what it is, I guess.
Okay, awesome. Since I don't have the show notes in front of me, and we haven't done this improv in a while, I don't even know if that's where we're at. If it's like, so what did you do this week in guns, or...
That's what we're at, yeah. No, good
okay,
job.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. So that was... It was a natural transition until I just... questioned it.
That's right. Had you not questioned it, everything would have been smooth. And as it is, okay. It's a regular Slam Fire show.
So take two. Matthew, what did you do this week in guns?
So I did some hunting.
Awesome. That's what you said? No.
And I went back to the range with the Beretta, my little 71. And I can't stop going to the range and shooting that thing. I'm having so much fun with it. I've been testing different ammunition through it. I took the chronograph last time to see what kind of velocities I was getting with it just for fun. And I've been bringing my flip up targets and shooting that at various distances. I can't stop shooting it. I love it. In fact, it's sitting right here in front of me. I wish I could go out to the range and shoot it right now.
And because there is no 22 rimfire shortage up here in Canada, you don't have to stop shooting it.
That's right. I've been shooting it a lot. I've heated up the barrel on it quite a bit, actually. There was a couple of times when I put it down and then picked it back up, I just kind of grabbed the whole gun and my hand was on the barrel. Wow, that's heating up. For a 22, that's impressive. I'm
surprised.
I'm definitely putting stuff through this at a rapid pace. But, yeah, no, it's been good. I really enjoy it. It's been a lot of fun, and we're going to talk more about fun guns later on, so I'll move on. Yeah.
Did you compare velocities between the old barrel and the new barrel?
See, you'd think I'd do something like that, wouldn't you?
Well, it's kind of... You've got the chronograph, got two barrels.
The time that I brought the chronograph, I didn't bring my other barrel. I only had the short barrel. So when I got to the range, I was like, that would have been a great idea. I hope they don't ask me about this on the show, because that would be embarrassing.
I knew I would.
Thanks, Trev.
You're welcome.
I will... I'll try to remember to do that next time I go out. Actually, I might not have a chance. I think my long barrel is going to the gunsmith to get cut and threaded. and then put the move the sight back too. So I've got a short barrel now. I know it works. So I didn't really want to mess with the long barrel because if I screwed it up, I'd have no barrel. But now that I've got a second one, I think it'd be fun to put a threaded well, put threading on the front there, so I can either put a fake can on it to play, you know, James Bond around the house, or and hear me out on this one, put a big compensator on it so I can finally beat Thomas Donnelly at 22 shoots.
I'm so bored with this conversation. Oh my god, I heard. Question.
Yeah.
Once you change the barrel on that,
yeah,
that changes the number written on your registration certificate. Do you have to advise the CFO and get a second a certificate or a new, you know, like, what do they do in that situation? Do they give you a certificate for each barrel length? What's the story on that?
As I understand it, as long as the modification to the gun or the change to the gun does not change its classification, you don't need to notify anybody. So it went from a restricted firearm to a restricted firearm. It didn't change class. So I don't have to notify anybody. If for whatever reason I had my 12.6 and I changed the barrel to its original length and it was now a prohibited firearm, then I'd have to notify them and they'd reissue me a certificate that said prohibited on it instead of restricted.
All right.
As I understand it, so maybe the lawyers out there, Cyclone, I'm looking at you. If I'm grievously wrong and I need to notify somebody quickly, maybe you could send me a quick email.
Well, I'm going to find out probably next week when we get into what I did this week in guns. You'll find out why. I'm going to make the call. I'm going to ask that question.
And, oh, cool. Yeah, that'd be good.
And I'll throw the hypothetical at them that would apply to your situation at the same time.
And see what they say.
Yeah.
Be good to know. Yeah, I know exactly what you're going to talk about. So, yeah, why don't you go ahead and talk to us about that?
Okay, cool. A friend of the family that I went to dinner. Oh, yeah, and there was an email about guns. Or wood. Yeah, that's right, from Spencer the Whale. He was all freaked out because I got ammo, but I guess. Yes. So last week or 2 weeks ago when I was on the show, look, I just came back from a buffet.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to digest, and all the blood from my brain is in my stomach digesting all those chicken wings and Chinese happy time goodness. So I'm really not with it.
Oh no! Look, let me tell you, if your blood is in your stomach trying to digest food, you really are. Something's wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's pulling all the resources from all the other parts of my body to work on the belly.
I understand completely. It's all good. Carry on.
So a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned the show, or I mentioned the show, that I brought home a Savage Mall 99, not 99,
99 red balloons.
I was going to do that too, yeah. And the Cooey Model 84, was it?
Yes.
Yes. So anyway, the same gentleman has a prohibited revolver, and it's an Ivor Johnson Safety Matic or something like that. I don't have the email open in front of me from
that
the firearms lab.
Sounds about right, though. It sounds like the sort of names they gave guns back in the day. It's a Safety Matic. This gun is safe.
They did claim that, you know, there was no way it could be. It had something like a firing pin stop for the hammer.
Right.
So when the hammer was down, in one of their original ads, they showed it was a drawing of what looked like somebody hitting the hammer of the gun with an actual carpenter's hammer. You know, totally safe. Anyway.
It's funny because I remember seeing an ad similar to that, except it was, you know, touting how safe this gun was. It was a drawing of a kid in bed with this revolver, like,
that's
in her hand as she slept.
That's the one. That's the one.
That's this how revolver. Safe our gun is, folks. Give it to your kids to play with as they sleep.
This revolver was, according to the owner, it was his father's, and possibly his grandfather's before that. And it was marketed to women, very small. So no question, it was a prohib. He said it was registered, and he has all the paperwork and all that good stuff. But when I took one look at it, I'm like, this. And he told me it was a 38. And I said, it's not a 38. I'm not sure what it is. I said, it might be a 32. I'm not sure, but it's definitely not a 38, right? What I should have said was, it's not a 38 special.
Right.
In fact, it's a 38 Smith & Wesson.
Right.
So I asked if it was okay with him if I inquired with the Canadian Center for Firearms if it was an actual antique. And if it was, then, you know, I could acquire it along with the other firearms.
Right.
And if not, then, you know, there was the 12.7 would apply, right? Because it's older than 1946, so he would be able to transfer it to even a nephew.
That's right. Yeah, it's any sort of family, I believe.
Yeah, it's got to be blood, any kind of blood relative.
Oh, it's got to be blood. Oh.
Yeah.
It can't be like an adopted kid.
No, sadly not. So,
because he could just adopt you.
Yeah, which I'd be all right with. Yeah. So I took a bunch of pictures of the gun and sent the photograph. Well, it was Monday morning. I sent the description off and to the I got in through the back door. A friend of mine used to work for the office in the Miramichi that I know through archery. So right. She's like, call this number, dial
you're talking
this extension.
You're talking the firearms center. Firearms center, yeah.
Yeah. So but she gave me the direct line for the lab, right?
Nice.
So call this number, dial this extension, say this, this, and this. So that's what I did. And then, yep, fires off an email. They were not invasive whatsoever. They didn't ask me any questions. They simply listened to what I said and answered my questions.
Nice.
They didn't want to know who had it. They didn't want to know if he had a license. They were not invasive whatsoever.
They just they were just answering questions for you.
Yeah.
It's their job or something.
Well, here's the thing. There's a lot of fear-mongering out there about the firearm center and how they're, you know, out to get us and stuff. But in reality, what my friend who used to work at the Miramichi office told me, she said, the government wants the guns that are out there on the books. They don't want them in closets. They want them back into the system. So we're told to be encouraging. So when you call us, we're warm and fuzzy with you to get you to work with us to get the gun back on the books. So we don't ask a whole lot of questions.
That's it. You don't want to scare them off.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they do the job and they ask what they have to. But anyway, it was a very positive experience. However, in the end, after I sent an email saying, please look at these pictures, and then sent another email that actually included the pictures.
I hate it when I do that too.
Oh, it's Monday morning, right?
Please see attached. There's nothing attached. Dang it.
After I sent the first email, I got on the Facebook CGN page and I said, all right, here's what I got. And I posted the pictures. Any antique experts out there want to tell me what this is and whether or not it will fall under the definition of an antique or whether it will fall under prohib. And it took no time at all. Everybody's like, three, four people. Literally, that's an Ivor Johnson, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's old enough to be an antique, but unfortunately, it falls under the caliber exemption because it's in 38 Smith & Wesson. It's exempt from the antique status. It's a 12.6 year SOL.
Yeah.
So when I sent the email with the pictures, I said, I've since learned it's a 38 Smith & Wesson, so this is probably a moot point. And they replied back and said, okay, that is, and they gave me a bit of information on the firearm, more than they had to. They gave me, you know, they were made in from here, this date to this date, they were made here, and this is the make and model. And you're right. It is, they said, you're right. It is not considered an antique, so it needs to be registered to the individual who has it or a business.
Right.
And then that was it. We were done. So... overall, I want to share it because it was a positive experience, and I encourage anyone out there who knows an older gentleman or a widow who has firearms, don't think that calling them up and asking questions about these firearms is going to result in a knock on the door and a search for these firearms. You don't have to give the person's name who has the guns. You just have to call up and say, look, there's an old guy. He's going to a senior's home soon. And he wants to give me these guns. I know they're not registered. He was old when the law changed. He never bothered to look into it. Just don't even get into a whole bunch of details. There's an old guy who's got unregistered guns. I'd like to register them under the amnesty.
Yeah, and there you go. You're done.
Yeah. Mark Giroux did that.
Yeah.
Somebody who knew somebody who had an old .22 revolver in a closet. Yep. A couple of phone calls later, Mark is now in legal possession of that revolver.
Yep. Yeah, this isn't the first time I've heard of this happening. And, you know, it's nice that the amnesty is there so people can get guns that are, you know, like you said, in old closets, you know, the back of a shoebox or whatever. You know, they can get them back into circulation, I guess, if you will, without fear of prosecution or getting them confiscated.
Yeah. It's either somebody turns around and gives them to somebody that they shouldn't without a license or something like that. That's a problem. And then you could end up in trouble with the law. Or the worst, the worst possible scenario, in my opinion, is that the Widow calls the RCMP and they pick them up and then destroy them.
That's right, yeah.
And even then, I've heard of RCMP members getting permission from their supervisors to go see the owner of the firearm and say, hey, could I buy this from you rather than us destroy it?
Yeah.
And provided that there's full disclosure and it's a legal purchase and everything, that's been okay too.
Yeah, so, it's another way to keep a gun from getting cut up, which is always the end goal for us to, you know, we don't want to see that.
Yeah, because not all Mounties are anti-gun.
That's right.
There are gunnies out there. I mean, two of the three that died in Moncton were members of the NFA. So
yeah,
one of them shot, you know, IPSC with us. So anyhow, what else did I do? I built a polymer lower. I really had, and this is Jules' fault.
Yes, of course.
Totally Jules' fault. It's your wife's fault that I built a polymer lower. There,
makes sense to me. I'm not even going to question this. Let's move on.
I had no desire for a polymer lower, but two things happened at once. One, you said that you were going to try and set up a 22 caliber AR for Jules to run in the Daniel Shaw Clinic.
Yep.
And almost within the same day or within a day, Luke Shrew's like, I got a polymer lower for sale. You interested? Am I ever? And I was totally interested simply with the fact that the total rationale for this purchase was I'll buy this and we'll put it underneath Filthy's 22 upper and Jewel will have an ultra lightweight 22 AR for the course. What am I going to do with it after Jewel's done with it?
You're going to have to get a 22 upper.
I'm going to have to get 22 upper.
There's no real option here. You just got to do it.
And that is the plan. I mean, that is the plan. Get a, because the Smith & Wesson M&P 22, I don't like it at all. Like the whole thing, the upper, the lower, it's all, everything on the gun. It's almost as bad as the Mossberg Plinkster wrapped in plastic.
Yeah.
It feels that cheap. Everything is plastic except for the barrel. So if I get an upper like Filthy has, the upper is just like any other AR upper. It's all metal parts.
That's it. Yeah.
So I want to build a dedicated AR in 22, and most people would think that would be something you would want to do.
There's a reason why I don't want to do that. I think we all know what it is. I can't take it hunting.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I've got a 22 conversion kit for my AR, so if I feel the need to shoot 22 through my AR, which I do on a regular basis, I thank Filthy, and I put my 22 conversion kit in that he gave me, and I use that.
I do too, but you know what bugs me about those is it's just OCD. I know that the twist rate in that barrel is not optimized for 22, and if you buy a dedicated 22 upper, it actually does have the 1-in-16 twist.
You're absolutely right about that, and it does suffer slightly in accuracy whenever I'm at the range. But here's the thing: I don't shoot my AR precision. I shoot my AR quickly, and I just put up my gongs or you know a big target, and I'm hammering it. You know. Double taps, triple taps, whatever. So
let me tell you a little bit about this polymer lower.
Yeah.
It's made by ATI. It's ATI Omni. It's a Gen 1, and there's a Gen 2 in the market where they beefed up a few areas, the back where the receiver extension goes on, and perhaps around where the roll pin is inserted to hold the bolt stop in place. Reason being, the Gen 1... The reviews I read about the Gen 1 ATI polymer lower indicated that they were failing and cracking in those two places.
Cracking, that's not good.
No, and I think they were breaking under fire back by the receiver extension, but people were breaking them while assembling them where the pin goes in to hold the bolt stop in place. So the bolt stop pin is a roll pin, and what happens is it's slightly larger in diameter. Well, not quite. It's not larger in diameter than the hole you put it in. Otherwise, it wouldn't go in.
Right.
But it's certainly tight. And as you drift the pin into the receiver, the aluminum receiver compresses the roll pin and makes for a nice, tight, snug fit.
Right. Yep.
In the polymer receiver, the polymer,
I can see where this is going.
Right. The polymer simply doesn't have the structural integrity to compress the pin. And the pin cracks the polymer. So,
ergo, broken receiver.
Yeah. Filthy to the rescue again. Long live the Empire, by the way.
You're turning, aren't you?
I've already been turned.
Oh, well.
Yeah, no, I'm totally your rebel scum, along with the Empire.
Were there cookies?
There were cookies.
Oh, wow. I always thought that was just propaganda.
No, man, macadamia nut.
Oh, I might come to the dark side.
And I'm allergic to nuts. There's the irony, right? It's like the Twilight Zone. You wanted the cookies, here are your cookies. Oh, you can eat them. So, Filthy provided me a link to the reviews that I mentioned a while ago. And one of them, this guy, I love this guy. He came on and he's basically like, I'm going to explain why you idiots broke your receivers and prevent you other idiots from making the same mistake these idiots made. I'm like,
Did he call people idiots?
Pretty much, yeah.
All right.
In my mind, he did.
In your mind, he did. It doesn't matter. You thought they were idiots, and so did he.
Yeah. So, no, he simply said, he explained the whole thing about the roll pin and why and how that worked. And he said, here's what you do. You have two options. Take a pair of channel lock pliers. I don't know if it'll work in other pliers. He mentioned channel lock. I use channel locks.
That's right. It needs to definitely be channel lock.
He said channel lock.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be reaching for the linesman pliers, and I'd be having a meltdown. So
he said channel lock. Don't use those. What? They're just pliers. That's the wrong one.
Tapping my head like Rain Man. Water burn, baby. Those aren't channel locks. definitely. So I compressed the pin with the channel lock pliers, and it drifted in there. And I may have actually compressed it a little bit too much because it almost drifted in too easily. So that's fine. If it starts to walk under the intense recoil of 22 long rifle.
Well, it is pretty intense.
Yeah, I'll just take another pin, compress a little less, and drift it in. So he said you got two options. Compress the pin and drift it in, or any hardware worth its salt will have pins. Go find one slightly smaller than what you have and
that's
use
it.
That.
Yep.
So that being said, it went together. I mean, it was 15 minutes and I had it all built.
Nice.
I put it on the scale and I texted you that I can't get to the pictures on my phone right now because I'm using a different app and I don't want to take a chance messing up my phone and dropping the call. But I sent you pictures, did I not?
You did, yeah.
Yeah, and it was almost a full pound in difference.
Yeah, it was light. Very light. Yeah.
So I compared it to my STI. Was it my STI? My STI, because my STI had a stock that was similar to the M4 style stock that I put on my polymer lower. And with a buffer and tube, I took the buffer and tube of the STI, put it in the polymer lower tube, weighed it, and then weighed the STI, and the polymer lower is almost a full pound lighter. Give me an example.
Give me an example of something that's lighter? That's a great idea. Go for it.
No, it's an example was not the word I should have used, but
that's okay. Just to throw some numbers out there.
Only to you. Everybody else just thinks you're a jerk.
Right, well, I am, so it's cool.
as long as we all agree.
Yeah.
So the NEA weighs 8 pounds, the STI weighs 9 pounds, and the Mark 18 is 7-something. Well, I put the Mark 18 upper on the polymer lower, and it came in at just over 6 pounds.
That's that's going to be a light gun.
So you take Filthy's 22 upper, which doesn't have a full auto bolt carrier group and bolt in it.
Right.
And we won't need a buffer and recoil spring.
Nope.
So we should still be around, you know, it's got a 16-inch barrel as opposed to the 10.3-inch barrel. It's not as heavy.
But it's a very lightweight barrel. It's not a heavy contoured one. So
we could come in. We should be knocking around the 5.5-6 pound mark on this rifle.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah, which is going to be... That's lighter than her 795.
Awesome.
No, it's not. Yes, it is.
Well, it's going to be handy.
It's going to be very cool. Handy. I'm going to want to shoot it. I'll give her my gun. I'm going to use it.
So then real quickly, next thing I did was I finally got around to setting up my RCBS 223 X-Die. And what the X-Die does is it's designed to prevent your rifle brass from stretching when you full length resize it. It's actually quite simple to set up. You take a piece of fired brass, full length resize it, trim it, chamfer it, deburr it, put it into the X die, and adjust the mandrel almost like you know how you bring your your die on a crimp die, you bring the die body down just until it touches the brass, and then you give it another eighth of a turn, let's say.
Yep.
Well, in this case, you insert the brass into the X die, and you screw down the mandrel until it touches the case mouth, and then you stop. You're done. It's set. Then you take that piece of brass, load it, go out and shoot it, bring it home, resize it in that die, and it will not stretch. So the That's beauty cool. of it is, yeah, it's cool. However, there is one major drawback. You always have to retrieve your brass.
That's true.
Otherwise, so if you take a bunch of processed brass and set the X die to the length of that processed brass and recover that brass, you will never have to trim it again. But every time you have to process a fresh piece of brass, well, that's the way it goes. But if you always trim all of your brass to the same length, like let's say, for example, you use Lee's brass cutting system or brass trimming system that works with you put the shell holder in the chuck of a drill, yep. and then you have a cutter and a shaft that goes inside the brass that will not allow you to cut the brass too short. It's the simplest brass trimming system out there because you don't have to adjust it. It's preset.
Yeah, it's preset. You
can't mess it up. Yep. You push on the cutter until it stops cutting. You're done. So if you have a really bulletproof system like that in place of trimming your brass, then great. You'll always have all of your brass trimmed the same way, and you can just keep your X die set up. So assuming that you're retrieving your brass, here's how the X die could work for you in a progressive press. It would be the exact same as pistol as loading pistol calibers. Only you have to lube your cases. That's right. I mean, you take your brass home from the range, clean it in your tumbler just like you would your 9mm. Lube it, throw it in your case feeder, and go. Where in the past, you would have to resize all your cases first, then trim them, then deburr them, then chamfer them. No more. As long as you're retrieving your old brass.
Yeah, that's the kicker there.
Yeah, but then again, you could, and I think, I don't know if you want to go through this effort, if you pick up other people's brass, you could put it in the X die, provided that it is not longer than what you've adjusted your X die to. So you take a piece of your brass that you've trimmed, set your digital calipers to it, and just check these pieces of brass that you picked up. And as long as they're all shorter than what you have your caliper set to, you're good. You could sort your brass that way. Or you could just, okay, I know this is not my brass, so I'm going to full length resize it. You just don't want to put a piece of brass in your X die that is longer than what you have your X die set to, or you're going to run into problems. It won't full length resize correctly.
Yeah, and that would be a pain.
Yeah. So there's an upside. I mean, getting your brass back in a match, you know, what I'll do is I mark all of my match ammunition for my pistols. I will mark all of my rifle match brass from now on. And at the end of the day, when the match is over and I'm picking up rifle brass, when I get it home, I'll sort it based on marked and not marked.
Makes sense.
If it's marked, it goes in one bucket because I know it's mine and it can go through the X die. If it's not, I'll put it in with my regular range brass.
That should save you some time whenever you're reloading, that's for sure.
Yeah, so. All right. Well, that's it for what we did this week in guns. Let's move on to our next section, and that is upcoming events. And I don't believe we have any.
We don't.
All right then. So listeners, if you have any upcoming events coming up anywhere in Canada, at your something going on at your gun club, a social event, a charity event, a fundraiser, a raffle, a draw, a match, a training class, anything at all, we'd love to hear about it, and we'd love to promote your event on our show. So please drop us a line. News.
We don't have any news.
We don't have any news. All right then.
Nothing really popped out at me this week. The only thing, a couple of things. News. No, a couple of things. One of them was they sort of released the preliminary, or they've tabled the bill or whatever it is they do in Parliament about the common sense laws.
Yeah, so let's highlight a few things.
Sure. Well, they highlighted, let's see here. They tabled the bill, the common sense. Yeah, I think I covered it.
No, well, I'm saying let's pick a couple items that we like and that we don't like.
Okay. Can I pick what I don't like?
Yeah, and I'm going to argue against it. Go ahead.
Okay, I don't like mandatory class time before you challenge your test.
Yeah. And you did talk about this last week, and your rationale was.
Did we talk about it last week? Oh, okay.
Well, you did.
I forgot.
You said, if I could paraphrase.
Please do, because I'm sure you'll get it perfectly right. Yeah, go ahead.
If somebody already possesses the knowledge required to pass the test, why force them to take the class?
Right.
The issue I have with that is I believe that it's a small percentage of the population that actually truly possess the skills and the knowledge to ace the practical. There are a lot of guys that go and challenge a test because of, bravado, and they barely make it through, but they made it through. And I think these are the guys that end up on the range that were a problem before they took the class or challenged the test, and now they're a problem on the range.
Get a pencil and a calendar and put down, "You were right. Matthew said so." That's a good one. No, I didn't even consider that, because here's the thing. And in a perfect world, the test would be a true test of the skills and the knowledge that you need. We know that's not the case. It's not a true test of what you need to know. It's just a test that somebody made up based on random selection out of the book. A lot of those questions, the ones that I remember, don't even apply 90% of the time to everyday gun life.
I bet you, Matthew.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. Finish your thought.
I was just going to finish. Yeah. If I could be so bold.
You could.
So having people pass this test without taking the class, they are missing things. Now, that being said, the classes aren't necessarily teaching everything they need to know either, but at least it's a start.
And some classes, they run the gamut. Some guys literally read the book to you, which is insulting to somebody like me who has 2 university degrees and knows how to read, believe it or not, contrary to what you might think about my reading performance on this show.
Look, reading and reading aloud are 2 different things.
You got it.
So marked it down again in the calendar. Matthew was nice to you. There. That's it, though, for this week. I mean,
Owen needs to stay away a lot more. I think maybe he's but souring you, I guess. I don't know. And then you've got the other end of the spectrum where they don't open the book and bore you to death with fairy tales and war stories. And these are often the guys that haven't shot a gun in 6 years.
Yeah.
That's the worst one. In this area, I know people go and take the class, and then they tell me later that I would rather drink turpentine than have to sit through a class with those 2 guys again. I've had 2 people tell me that they were seconds away from raising their hand and saying, "Could you just stick to the material so I could get out of here, please?"
Yeah.
I didn't pay a registration fee to listen to you tell stories. Yeah. I'm here. I don't want to be here as it is, and you're not making this any better.
Well, that's the thing, eh? And we've heard stories like this before. My personal, if I could talk about my personal training, whenever I went and took it, it was actually pretty good. He didn't read just from the book. He took a section of it and then read it, and then we discussed it. And then he read it as another section, and we discussed it. There was no war stories. There was no, back in 1804 when I first got my first brown bat. None of that. It was just straightforward. It was a well-taught class, and I'm fortunate to have been able to attend one like that. But lately, I have been hearing just exactly what you're talking about. People, going to classes, and either it's completely just out of the book, or it's nothing but stories. And you don't learn that way.
No, I know. And I mean, I'll share a story of one of my experiences with training. They give you the book ahead of time for a reason, right?
Yes.
To familiarize. Yeah, that's right. So I did things backwards. I went and took a bow hunting course first, then challenged the restricted, then challenged the non-restricted. So during the bow hunting course, I actually did take the course. I show up, book read cover to cover, and a notebook with notes. And to my chagrin, the instructor sat down, opened page 1, and started to read. And then it got worse when he asked people around the room to read a section and somebody else to read a section.
Oh,
I'm like, are we in grade 7? What are you doing? And, you don't know who in the class is literate and who's not, so that's not fair to do as an instructor.
That's right.
at first break the second night, me and my buddy walked up and said, "Give us the test." Yeah. And he gave us a test. We wrote it and we left. And he knew that we were both a better shot than he was, so he didn't actually have us do the archery shooting test. He just let us go.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And so I thought, if this is how classes are taught in New Brunswick, I'll just challenge the next two exams. And my restricted firearms class, Doug Getty, was the one Christina and I drove to the Miramichi. It's so funny because in the end, Doug locked his keys in his car and it was running, and Christina and I had to drive him back to his house to get his keys. And so he never forgot me after that, right? And I love this. Doug gave me my firearms restricted class. Now I go teach his black badge classes. So it's come full circle.
That's
it's really
cool.
Awesome. Yeah. So after it was me and a guy from America who had moved to Canada and wanted to get his firearms license. And when the exams were done, the only thing I messed up was I didn't put my ATT in the case with the gun, and they want you to do that.
Yeah.
He told me afterwards, he said, "You two are the best challenges I've had since I've been doing this. There's no question that you guys are familiar with firearms." I mean, I had Officer Frank go through the material with me and went to his house, and he showed me how to handle his service pistol and stuff like that. So I was more than ready. But anyway, so okay, that's going to change, though. The only way you're going to be able to challenge now is if you had a license before and it expired. If you're a new licensee, you have to take the test. What else? ATTs.
ATTs, I mean, that's not something I don't like.
I have a question about the ATTs.
But yeah,
I have a question. They're saying that some of the ATTs that we've been getting automatically, and it's a little different from province to province, but let's just use New Brunswick as an example. They have been, every year when we renew our gun club membership, issuing us our ATT to the range. And in this province, it was good for gunsmiths and any range approved for the discharge of restricted firearms. So they would give that to us automatically. Now, we won't need that magical piece of paper anymore. Also, if I want to buy Matthew's SR9, I won't need to wait for the ATT to go pick it up. I simply need to wait for the approval of the transfer. Once I know I have confirmation that the transfer is approved, I can just go get it. I won't need an ATT to bring it home. So that's cool.
Now, does that mean we don't actually have the piece of paper anymore? Or does it mean,
you will have the letter that says you are now authorized to give this to Furlot.
No, but what I'm saying is their proposed changes say no ATT. Or
right.
They worded it in such a way that it made it sound as if it's a possibility that you could still have to get the initial ATT, but that ATT would be good for everything.
That's not... So there you go. That's not quite how I understood it, but...
Yeah, the way I understood it, it sounded like that it could go that way. And if that's the way it goes, then we've really not really won a whole lot here because that's what we got anyway.
Right.
But it is a good thing for other provinces if it is that. But what I'm really hoping it is like you said, no piece of paper anymore. Your authorization to transport is implied because you have a restricted license.
What I want to know, if that is the case, let's say they don't mail out that magical piece of paper anymore.
Right.
It's just implied. You have a license to own it. That license is now a license to transport it where you're allowed to transport it. Don't get caught somewhere with it you're not supposed to, like back of the woods.
Yeah.
What I want to know is this going to be nationwide? The Firearms Act is a federal law. It should apply from coast to coast. My question is, will it? Will the boys coming to the Daniel Shaw Clinic, let's pretend the Daniel Shaw Clinic is next year, or they're coming back for part two next year, let's say, if we put it on for a second time. Will they need an ATT to come to this clinic?
Yeah, is it going to be good just for their province, or is it going to be good all the way across the country?
Right. You know, so here's the scenario. They get stopped while going through Quebec. "Hi, guys. What are you doing?" "We're on our way to New Brunswick for a firearms class." "You have firearms in the car?" "Yeah. Mind if I check?" "I do, but go ahead anyway." "All right. So you got a license? Can I see it?" "All right. Your firearm is secured properly. It's got a trigger lock on it. It's in a lock case." "Good. All right. See you later."
Hopefully that's the way it would be. Hopefully they don't say, "Where's your ATT?" Because what if you know, some provinces decide that, "Oh, we're going to issue ATTs anyway."
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
we had CFOs go against the law before, but that is another thing. That's right, yeah.
They're restricting the CFOs. Beautiful, yeah. It's like we're professionals.
No, it's not.
They are going to basically trim a little bit off the top of the CFO's discretionary powers.
Yeah, so every decision that they make or any policy that they have now must, it can't contravene any federal law.
And they have to justify it.
Yeah.
They can't just no more willy-nilly, we're going to do this, because they actually, if they're going to make something up, they have to justify it in writing. So that's just some of the highlights of the proposed changes. There's two there. Well, one for sure that is not new. I think they threw a few things in here as appeasement to the liberals and the gun grabbers. One, for example, is they said that if you're convicted of a violent crime, you will lose your firearms. Well, that's new.
No, it's
not. I thought I could slap the snot out of my wife whenever I felt like it, and I could get my guns. Yeah. What do you mean I'm going to lose? No, you're right. That's not new, but
They put it in anyway. Let's add another law. That way it'll be double wrong for them to do it.
Exactly,
then no one
right?
will definitely not do it, because that's double dog dare.
Exactly. Exactly. But you know what? Like I said, if that's not appeasement for the liberals, what is?
Yeah, exactly.
They put in something. They made something publicly known that we already
was
know exists.
Already completely, on the books.
Yeah. So. But, I like that they did that, though. To shut up the liberals, because remember that story I told a couple of like 2 or 3 months ago, where I was at the bar and I was talking to the doctor and his brother.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah,
I dispelled so many myths by explaining to them some of the strict laws that we in fact already have that they didn't think we had, and they felt better about firearms owners and firearms ownership in Canada after I explained certain things to them that they didn't know existed. And you know why they didn't know they existed? Because the gun grabbers never talk about the restrictions that we have. They just talk about some of the freedoms that we have, and
they're fear mongering. They're just trying to rip away every freedom that we have. Yeah. You know, don't bother talking about how safe it actually is.
Yeah. So
irritating.
Anything? Any other items in the news? I've got one. If you don't have anything else,
yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it's not so much a news item as a fear-mongering rumor that I'm going to start right now. So,
hey, did you hear that they're pulling SKSs out of Canadian Tires in Ontario?
I did. I did hear that. Corporate office in Ontario for Canadian Tire has contacted all the Canadian Tire retailers across Ontario and has told them to immediately stop the sale and remove from the showcases SKS rifles, and we don't know why yet. So if you're listening to this podcast on Friday morning, Stacy, like I know you like to. It's very important, Matthew, by the way, you get these shows out in time for Stacy, because
yes,
if you don't,
I understand. I get yelled at.
It's a very and Melissa. Mm-hmm. It's a very we are part of their Friday routine, and you don't mess with a woman's routine. You know what
look,
I'm saying?
Look, if Toby can't please his wife, I guess I'll have to be the one to do it.
Okay.
I gotta find a cricket sound to insert there for the show.
Ever speechless for the first time in podcasting history. So if you're listening to this on Friday morning, stop whatever you're doing. I don't care if you have to quit your job or leave your child at home unattended or whatever. Nothing is more important in your life right now than buying an SKS rifle while you still can.
That's right. Yep. You better get out there, buy one. And while you're there, you might as well pick up some .22. You might as well hoard that stuff like it's candy.
So I don't know what this is all about, but I know that the only appropriate response here is to buy a crate of SKSs.
At least two crates. I mean, it's not like they're not cheap. I mean, come on.
Clean one and leave the other one in Cosmoline.
Yeah, bury it in the backyard in a PVC pipe. But you got to bury it standing on end, so when they ground penetrate radar, that ground, all they see is a circle. They don't see the gun shape. That's an important step.
You're smart. Right smart you are.
I may have listened to stories from tinfoil hatters a few too many times.
That's funny. But all joking aside, buy a case. No. it's on CGN. We don't know why. But here's the rumor, the CGN rumor. It's Thursday, after all. The corporate office for Canadian Tire has advised all Canadian Tires in Ontario to immediately stop the sale of SKS rifles. Why, we don't know. But
so,
we don't need to know. All we need to know is go buy SKS.
That's right. So, cool.
Now, I immediately went to my nearest Canadian Tire, which had no SKSs on sale. But I don't know if they had any earlier in the day or not.
Like, well, it was the mad rush, right?
Yeah. Now, every slot in their showcase was full. So it's not like there was like three inconspicuous.
Right. So maybe they just don't carry SKSs or something.
Yeah, it's possible. The one in Campbellton does, however. Yeah. But I'm not in Campbellton right now, so
we're not in Ontario either, so it may not even apply to, you know, who knows? Who knows what's going on?
I'll
have to go do some digging and find out.
In the meantime, buy an SKS.
Yeah, or two, or a crate.
Yeah, or two crates.
Better be safe.
And some 22.
Sure.
All right, what else we got? What's next?
That's it. Let's move on to our main topic.
All right. So for the topic this week, Matthew and I decided that we would just chat about some of our favorite guns. Maybe guns that we've owned, maybe not, but guns that we shot and we got a kick out of. Just a good old-fashioned fun, good time with a gun. And I thought I would bring up the collection that I've owned since 2010.
2011, I believe. 2011 is the gun that you like, not the
19.
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
There are currently 40 firearms on this list, and just because of that, I'm going to talk about every one of them, what I liked about. No, I'm just kidding. No, it could be guns that we owned, perhaps not, but they're guns that left an impact on us, so to speak.
Maybe literally, maybe figuratively, maybe metaphorically.
See what I did there?
Yes. We'll see where this goes.
Yeah. So why don't you go ahead first, Matthew, since it was your idea and a great idea it was.
Why don't we just go back and forth? I'll start with one, then you can do one. And okay, cool. Yeah. Well, the very first gun that popped into actually, it was the second one. So I'm going to talk about the second one because it should have been the very first one. My brain was just not enough coffee at the moment. But the first gun that should have popped into my head was the first gun that I ever sort of shot on my own, I guess. The only shooting that I did when I was young was air cadets, and then very limited pellet or BB gun action with a friend's BB gun because I wasn't allowed to have BB guns. So the first time I actually ever shot a gun was in air cadets, and after that, first time I got to shot a gun sort of on my own, unsupervised, was with a single shot bolt action 22. Maybe it was a Cricket.
So what you could have just said was, you know, single shot 22 bolt action Cricket.
Yeah, but then the show would have been way too short.
Tell us why you liked it. You had to go straight to rimfire. You're scooping below the pond scum right now.
Well, I didn't talk about airsoft.
No, you sure didn't.
Huh.
Carry on.
All right. Now that I'm feeling slightly deflated, it was a single shot 22 bolt action. Trevor, what's yours?
No, but I can appreciate why this gun left an impact on you. And you did set it up, and you had to set it up in order for this to actually matter. Because otherwise, if you had just said bolt action 22, it would have been pretty pathetic. But
right.
I think the reason why this particular firearm had an impact on you was then the thing that I clued in on was the fact that you shot this one unsupervised. It was the first firearm that you were able to get out there and play with alone, by yourself, without having to be babysat by anybody.
That's it. And that was a huge step in my firearms career. And I think it is for anybody. Whenever you're, you know, the first time you're out there on your own with your first gun or with the, you know, whatever, it's sort of a, you know, rite of passage almost. And it was neat. It was sort of, wow, I've got this responsibility and this, you know, I've got to make sure that I behave myself. I didn't. I should have. But, you know, I shot all kinds of things. I didn't get into any trouble with it. I didn't break any laws. But, you know, I probably could have been smarter. But here's the thing. Even as kids, whenever you go out there, you know, kids or parents are always like, oh, no, you can't let him go out by himself. He'll hurt himself. Well, probably not. You know, they might be dumb, but they're still smart enough to not do anything with any sort of lasting damage. At least I didn't get into any trouble that way. But it was just really cool. I would go out. I used to buy my ammo 50 at a time. And back then I was like, wow, I've got 50 22 bullets. This is a week of fun. Now, if I've got 50, that's two mags. So, you know, it just really changed just throughout the years, you know, being able to go to semi-auto and stuff kind of changes your perspective. But back then, wow, I'd go to the store once, you know, every weekend, every Saturday, we'd get to go into town. It was into Woodstock. It was Curry's. It was back when they were on the other side of the street. Only Owen knows this reference, so whatever. Nobody else cares. buy my box of 22 bullets for 99 cents, and out into the woods I'd go, and it was just really fun. One shot at a time, you had to make sure that you lined up properly the first time. You couldn't just kind of spray and pray. The sights on it were abysmal. The notch was maybe a millimeter deep and a millimeter wide, and then the front sight was just, it was just this little...
Okay, hold on a second. Focus more on the actual firearm for me. Do you remember, because since you've been talking, I stopped listening, and not to be rude, I'll tell you why. You've actually kind of stumbled on an entirely whole new topic here that we could perhaps dive into in another show, and that is, I've been trying, since you brought this up, I've been trying to listen to you, but also remember... Uh-huh. What the first firearm was that I was able to do that with? What was the first gun that my dad handed me on the way out the door when I went on my first hunting trip by myself or with a couple of my buddies?
Yeah,
you know, whether it was on the farm, my grandfather's farm, where I decided I was walking up into the field without him for the first time, or was it in the woodlot next to my parents' home where I grew up, or was it with friends? But I'm desperately trying to think back to, and I know there's only a couple of possibilities because the firearms that were in our family then are still in our family now. So there's only a few I can pick from. But I'm trying to remember, was it that particular 22 or was it the 20 gauge, you know, the Bakale? Which one right. was it? So tell me about this 22. Do you remember exactly what it was? Like, was it yours? Was it your dad's? Where did it come from?
Sure. It was a friend of mine. I had just finished my hunter safety training and I'd gotten my first hunting license and I didn't have a gun yet. I had my gun license, but I didn't have my gun. Well, I had my FAC, but I didn't have a gun. And he's like, here, you can borrow mine. Just, you know, back in the day, he just handed it to me, which is great. So it was a youth sized, like I said, single shot bolt action. I'm pretty sure it was a Cricket. It was a wood stock. It had a single thumb screw in the bottom of the stock that held the action into the stock itself. Mm-hmm. The bolt sort of reminds me kind of like what a Cooey would be like, except that whenever you pulled it back, part of the chamber actually slid back with the bolt, and that's where you rested the shell to help you feed it, and then that actually acted as the extractor and flicked the empty shell out too when you were done.
Up until that part, I was saying my father has one just like this, but I don't remember that feature.
Yeah, no, you open the bolt, you put the round in, you close the bolt, and then you pull back on the knob to cock
all
it.
Right,
it didn't
cool.
actually cock automatically, but
we have a couple of those.
Yeah.
My dad has probably three single-shot 22s, and I know there's at least two that when you close the bolt, then you have to grab the back of the bolt and pull it to cock it.
Yeah, Cooey 39s, and what's the other one? There's another one built in the same action. All that was different was the stock, I think. But again, another type of Cooey, and they were very popular, especially in Canada. So,
nice. Okay.
Yeah, no, that you know, it was just a whole different kind of shooting for me. It was just a lot of fun to be out in the woods and playing with. So, what about you?
All right, I'm totally going to go on the other end of the spectrum because this was supposed to be like our favorite fun guns that we've shot.
Yeah.
So I'm going like 50 BMG, you know, like, oh, that's cute, Matthew. You got to play with the 22. Yeah. No, definitely 50 BMG. Wade at our gun club, the same gentleman who let me shoot like a full box of 338 Lapua before I realized it was $200 a box. the Steyr M1A1 or something like that. Or M50, whatever. It's a box magazine fed, and the magazine is actually on the left side of the receiver, not underneath the receiver. And shot that, I don't know how many times at the gun range, probably half a dozen, you know. So that's one firearm that was definitely a blast to shoot. It's a blast to shoot, and it's a blast to stand next to when it's being shot.
Yeah, I stood directly in its muzzle blast. Trying to get a good picture.
In the chest. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, it had I not been crouched down and leaned forward, it'd stumble you back, man. Like it really moves you.
What else you got?
Next one on my list, you're going to love me. Another 22. Actually, it's a combination gun. It's a Savage 24C. C stands for
crap.
Crap?
Yeah. All right. These things are crap. Next.
All right. Your turn.
Desert Eagle.
Yeah, I see a theme. We've got two different ideas of what we find fun.
Yeah, we sure do. Yeah. This, you know, I mean, Desert Eagle in 50 Action Express, I shot it strong-handed. Just, you know, watching that 50 caliber bullet smack those gongs and knock them over, that just brings a smile on my face every time. It's just so much power in a handgun. It just, oh, man, I don't think I've ever giggled so much after shooting any firearm like I giggled after shooting. I giggled like a schoolgirl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shooting the Desert Eagle is one of the funnest things I've ever shot.
I do see that a lot in a lot of people. They really enjoy the massive amount of power that they can sort of harness. And, you know, you're talking about the 50 BMG, talking about the Desert Eagle. I'm going to talk about the 50 Beowulf here in a couple of minutes. But for me, I don't get that same, like when I shot the 50 Desert Eagle, I think I shot a magazine through it. So what's that, 7 rounds? And when I shot, I was done. I was done after that. It didn't make me laugh. I don't think I didn't get sort of any sort of, I don't know. I don't get the same sort of joy out of it. And maybe it's, I don't know.
You will definitely notice a theme. I've got 4 more on my list, and one will definitely surprise you. The other ones you'll be like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So what else you got?
Jungle Carbine, Lee Enfield.
Oh yeah. Yeah, cool. That's I've seen Pierre Luc rip through, shoot his, man. He loves that thing.
The only reason why I wouldn't shoot mine more, well, I don't have a Desert Eagle. I don't have the Jungle Carbine anymore. I have I still have a Lee Enfield, but it's a sporterized. But the only reason why I don't have it out in the woods more often is because we have stupid caliber restrictions here, and I can't carry it out in the woods unless I have a big game license. So. And I'm not going out in the woods plinking while big game season is on. So, I really liked it. I used to take it out to the range, and I'd go to Canadian Tire, buy a couple boxes just to go to the range and just shoot at stuff with it. I really like shooting the 3-03, and in the Jungle Carbine just seemed to be the right length. I really liked the look of it. The only thing I really didn't like about it was the weird flash hider that it had. But other than that,
yeah, I know, but it's so classic, right?
It is, it. Yeah.
I wouldn't want one without one.
The recoil pad. Maybe recoil enhancer is what they should have called it.
Probably
that thing
plate.
Was brutal.
Well, I'm going to keep the Milsert train going, believe it or not. One of the funnest guns I've ever shot and enjoyed and left an impression on me was the M1 carbine. I shot an M1 carbine at the small range that I used to be a member of. You remember the one that we went to that time?
Yes.
I shot one there with Paul Chesson. His father is an M1 carbine collector, and I was shooting some stuff, and they're like, hey, you want to try this thing? And I'm like, sure. You know what it was. No right. idea. Yeah, that's. I knew it was like military. I knew it was like World War II, and it was one of the first semi-automatic firearms I had ever fired, one of the first semi-automatic rifles. I got a kick out of it, and then, of course, shooting filthies with the paratrooper stock, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah.
It's a fun gun to shoot because it's so, I mean, there's no recoil and it's semi-auto and it's just a good time.
Yeah, that was fun. I remember shooting that. I enjoyed shooting it as well. Yeah, that's a good gun. Good choice.
What else?
Well, my next one was going to be the 50 Beowulf.
Yes. And what's not to love about that?
Well, nothing.
Nothing. I need a 50 Beowulf round from you, by the way. Can you remember to bring one tomorrow?
Yes, I can't. I probably can remember. If I could find it right now, I would put it somewhere where I wouldn't forget. I have a dummy round. Oh, there we go. I found a whole pile of them. All right.
Nice.
Yep. Got it. Here. Listen to this. That's a 50 Beowulf.
Nice. Thank you. All right. Anything else you want to say about that before we move on?
Well, it's cool. It's fun. I don't know.
It's like shooting an AR 12 gauge.
It is like, well, more like a 20 gauge. It's not as bad as a 12 gauge. But yeah, it's like shooting an AR. It thumps you. You're used to picking up this rifle that has next to no recoil. And next thing you know, you're getting hammered. It's like, what the heck? Yeah, that's 50 Beautiful. Beowulf for you.
Cool.
Good time. Good time, happy goodness.
My next one is the world's most powerful revolver, I think. Maybe there's some real odd thing out there, but we'll maybe say the most powerful production revolver, and that is the Smith & Wesson 500.
Right.
Again, same reaction as the Desert Eagle, but the Desert Eagle is more badass because it's semi-auto. But there's a Smith & Wesson 500 in our club, and I've shot it once, and yeah. I see these short 4- and 5-inch barreled Smith & Wesson 500s. That's just silly.
That would be silly.
Yeah, this was the big 8-inch model. I mean, just ridiculous. The grip on the gun looks so disproportionate from the rest of the firearm. The frame is so big, and the cylinder is so big, and the barrel is so big, and then you got
this little itty bitty kind of grip.
Yeah, yeah. So, what else you got?
Sig Mosquito.
Really?
Yep. Used to have one of those, and luckily I sold it
before it broke.
I sold it before the frame cracked.
Right.
Slide. Rick. I guess it was a slide that liked to crack on those. I used to have a full-size SIG, but it was a Norinco copy of a SIG, and I got the SIG Mosquito to kind of complement it because it was a 22 version of it, and I think it's a 3/4 size scale. It's exactly the same scale, but everything's 3/4 the size. It was actually a really tiny gun. I was surprised at how little it was, but I had a lot of fun with that out of the range.
Scaled down version. Was it Rick that had one that he didn't get rid of it in time? Rick's cracked? Somebody we know had one that cracked.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. They made the slides out of pot metal, which is just...
Yeah, stupid.
It's unfortunate. But it was a neat gun. I had a lot of range time with that. I really liked... And it's going to sound weird. I liked that it had so many controls. This was back before I realized simple is better.
Simplicity
is better. But... I liked that it had a decocker. I liked that it had a hammer. I liked that it had a mag release and a takedown lever and a trigger and a safety and all these different fun things that I could manipulate. And it was because I wanted to do something with my hands while I was watching TV. And so I got to play with the gun and take it all apart and put it back together and decock it and cock it and click it. And it was fun to have all those different controls and know how they worked and play with them. But I've learned the error of my ways. Simple is better. Just get a clock. One switch. Makes it go bang.
So again, carrying on with the theme.
Yeah.
Kunin. For those listeners that aren't familiar with the Kunin, they were and are once again a 1911 style platform chambered in .357 Magnum. These things are redonkulous. Kunin Ring of Fire. Just do a Google on the Kunin Ring of Fire. I don't know why it seems to happen in this firearm, perhaps more than others. I don't know. But there's literally, you know, you've seen smokers blow smoke rings. Well, this thing blows flame rings when it's, you know, when the lighting is right. And somebody in the club has one and used to shoot IPSC with it, believe it or not. They have 8-round magazines. He had a compensator barrel bushing adapter for it, and he actually shot IPSC with it for several years.
Did they make him stop once he, you know, he kept lighting the targets on fire?
No, this is Mr. Kingston, by the way.
Yes, yeah, I knew it was.
So I had his at the range one day with him working on it, cleaning it up, because he was having some issues with it. There's a cracked trigger bar in it, but there's some hammer fall happening right now, so I know how to fix it, but I haven't gotten my hands on it again to do it, so I can't wait to get it back, especially since I'm back into reloading for .357 Magnum. It's just silly. I mean, you take that beautiful .357 Magnum cartridge and then throw it in the semi-automatic platform. Awesome. Too bad it's a 1911-style platform, but Glock needs to make a semi-automatic .357 Magnum. That's what needs to happen.
That'd be cool. That'd be a big grip.
Yeah.
Be cool, though.
Yeah, we had, and this was a true accidental discharge.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't negligent because his finger was nowhere near the trigger.
That's
of course,
right.
I accused him of it until we cycled the gun dry and saw what was happening.
Yeah.
He inserted the mag, racked the slide, boom.
Bang.
The hammer followed the slide and discharged a round.
That's the thing. This, I mean, guns will malfunction sometimes, and so you have
why
to be careful.
Follow the rules. Yeah, exactly. What else you got?
Well, it's the last one on my list. I could think of others. Your sub 2000.
If we have enough time, I'll take it off my list. We'll share this one then.
All right. Yeah, the sub.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, the sub 2000. It was a lot of fun to play with. A lot of fun to shoot. I really liked that it took the Glock mags. To be honest, the only thing that would make it better is if it was in .22.
Unbelievable.
Well, yeah. Look, here's the thing. 22 is cheap and plentiful, and I can shoot it a lot out in the woods. That, yeah. You know, that's why do you think I'm drawn to it? It's such a fun cartridge to play with out in the woods. It's not too noisy. There's no recoil.
Get off the 22 kick and go back to the sub 2000.
All right, 22. Sub 2000. It was. What do you got to say about it? It was a neat gun.
Yeah. Here. Okay. Like you, I like that it took Glock mags.
Sorry. I want to say one thing before you carry on, because I know where you're going. Probably the one thing that made it so cool was it in its unaltered state, the way it came from the factory. You just folded it in half, threw it in your trunk, unfolded it, and shot it. That was it. That's how I liked it. Once you started changing things and putting stuff on it, that's when I sort of saw myself kind of getting further and further away from it. But when it was unaltered, that's how I really, really liked it.
Well, yes, I altered it, but I altered it. I made sure that I did not take away from the folding capability.
You didn't. You had that twisting.
I had the rotating fore-end from Red Lion Precision.
Right.
I love that it took Glock mags, and I love that you could fold it. And I love that everything, like an AR, the bolt and the barrel were all in a straight line.
Yeah.
You know, so there was no muzzle flip to it.
It was straight back recoil. And it was accurate enough out to 100 yards.
No, that was one of my downsides. You know, with a red dot, I was lucky to see a 3-inch or 4-inch group at 50.
Oh, really? Was it that bad?
Yeah, I found it was terribly inaccurate. And it was just a cheap piece of junk. I mean, it was made of plastic and parts were falling off of it.
So it was a neat concept, just poorly executed.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
I wonder, and I haven't shot one of these before, but it's a gun that I've always wanted to shoot, and I would have gotten one by now, but again, it's because it's in 9mm, and we can't shoot 9mm in the woods unless it's stupid caliber restrictions, but the Beretta PX4 carbine, or CX4, I guess.
And this is guns that we shot and like, not guns that we want to shoot.
That's right, but here's what I'm saying. I wonder if they're more accurate. I wonder if that would be a better 9mm carbine.
I don't know. I mean, I know the Just Right carbine. I've shot it, and I am much more taken with it than Sub 2000. Two reasons. The ergonomics are similar to the AR-15. Yeah. Takes AR-15 furniture. And third reason, Glock mag, and as far as I can tell, it's more accurate. So I guess that's four reasons.
That's okay. Well, nobody's counting. We can't count past potato anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, anybody out there with a Beretta CX4 Storm, send us an email. Tell us how accurate it is. Just out of curiosity, I just want to know. Ever since I saw them in Battlestar Galactica, it was like, oh, that'd be a fun gun to have. And you know what? I sat there and I found myself daydreaming. I could get a CX4 and a PX4. They could trade mags. I have my carbine and my pistol. And I was like, wait, I want to get a PX4? Slap myself. No. That's just silly talk.
I got three more. What do you got?
I don't have anything left. The only thing left that I've got is the guns that I currently own, and you don't want to hear about any of them. So,
All right. I'll go through these three quick then. KSG, because I've had three Kel-Tecs. I got rid of them all. I think they're junk. I think they're cheap, crappy firearms.
Here's the thing about Kel-Tec, if I can interrupt you.
Yeah.
Great innovation, great ideas, but like we discussed a minute ago, poor execution.
Yep.
The idea behind what they do and the innovation they come up with is astounding. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, they just need to do it better.
The KSG, I mean, you know, there's the other bullpup shotgun.
I know what you're talking about, though.
That one apparently has come a long, long way. They're on their third gen now, and all the bugs are worked out. But it's a lot bigger and bulkier than the KSG. What I really, really liked about the KSG, that's a trunk gun and a half, kids.
Oh, man, it's so small.
So small, smaller than the T97. I mean, 15 rounds of 2 3/4 inch 12 gauge, happy time goodness, compact package, bullpup pistol grip.
As a trunk gun, the only thing you'd have to worry about is loading it quickly. Whereas with your T97, you just throw a mag in.
You're right. It's a bad trunk gun because
learn to load it quick. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a shotgun if you can load it quick.
But this one does not load quickly. You're it's right. really The manual arms on it sucks. But anyway, it was fun to shoot. I mean, Steve Lee and I shot it and made that little video, and it's a fun, fun gun to shoot. After a while, knock you around pretty good too. But
yep.
Next was my XCR, and the thing I loved about my XCR, I found it too big and heavy and cumbersome for running and gunning. It had a heavy contour barrel, an 18.5-inch barrel to boot, and a monolithic upper. It was a heavy gun for a 223. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
But I would put this thing on a bipod, and I would get behind it, and I would just like imagine I would play like toy soldier. I would imagine it was like a machine gun in a foxhole or in a trench, and I would just dump mag after mag.
Yep.
I mean, I had such a big heavy barrel, I wasn't worried about heating it up at all, and I would just shoot it off of the bench on a bipod, just as fast as I could, just for fun. That was. And I just enjoyed doing that with it more than anything else. I mean, we took it hunting a few times, whatever, but...
Yeah, it was heavy, though, for that.
Yeah, it was heavy for hunting, and it was heavy for running and gunning.
Yep.
And finally, probably the funnest gun that I've ever shot, the funnest gun that I have, and that's my AR. Any, you know, my NEA, quickly, my Mark 18 is now replacing my NEA. Just... You can't say enough about ARs, man.
Yeah, no, I like my AR too. It's I really appreciate my AR, especially because a lot of our listeners donated parts towards it. But yeah, it's a really versatile platform. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've shot mine with everything from 22 to 23 and 50 Beowulf, all out of the same receiver. So
you put any of the guns that I mentioned on a table in front of me and tell me I can only have one? And I'm walking away with the AR every time, including the 50 BMG. Oh, yeah. And like you said, the versatility, the ergonomics, and it's just...
See, I couldn't do that. I would not walk away with a restricted firearm.
Yeah, I look past that, you know, because at the end of the day, if I ever needed an AR for its intended purpose, classifications wouldn't matter.
Sure, but you know, I look at it slightly different. I like my firearms for fun. I like to be able to go out in the woods and shoot them. And if I can't do that with my gun, then I don't mind having it, but that's not going to be my only gun.
Yeah. Well, see, these days I can't get in the woods anyway. I drive a car. I can't go hunting anymore like I used to when I had my little Jeep. And so the fun that I have with firearms happens at the range anyway. So.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. And you're fairly close to your range. I mean, you can get to your range in what, 20 minutes, 25 minutes?
Yeah, well, 25, yeah.
Yeah, it takes me almost 40 to get to mine. So I only go there if I'm going into town anyway and I've got a reason to, you know, I'm not burning a tank of gas just to go to the range. So
curious. How far is the airport that Daniel's flying into from the range?
Like 5 hours.
Okay, just checking.
Why is that?
Maybe if he had known that ahead of time, he would have booked his flights differently. I'm just, you know, just putting that out there.
Yeah, no, that's coming up. That's this
we
weekend.
Haven't said a thing about that.
Yeah, Thunder.
Tomorrow, you're going. You and Daniel Shaw is going to be in my house tomorrow.
Yes,
that's going to be cool.
Yep, that's right.
And you'll be there too, I suppose.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, well, I guess we can move on to some listener feedback then.
Alrighty. So, Matthew, since I don't have the show notes, I'm going to dictate that you read all three of our listener feedbacks this week.
Awesome. Can I make fun of the listeners whenever they misspell things again?
No, you may not. We had this conversation.
Right. No. Apparently, I'm supposed to apologize to somebody.
Yeah. Who was that again?
I forget his name. It was hilarious, though.
Well, again, and he's not listening anyway because I'm sure that you've upset him.
I insulted him, yes, I'm sure. Yeah. Or he's laughing right now at his computer.
Just remember, not everything that's funny to you is funny to the rest of us.
I know you don't understand. Buy me one more time?
Not everything that's funny to you...
No, you got to dumb it down a bit.
...is funny to the rest of us.
No, as if I don't understand.
You're not always funny?
No, you're talking gobbledygook now.
You're less funnier than you believe you are?
That's not true at all. All right, this one's from Spencer. And he says, I had to listen twice. Tactical Trevor bought a wood-stocked lever-action rifle. My brain.
See, there you go. I didn't buy nothing. It was given to me.
That's right. My brain just melted a little around the edges. Don't get me wrong. The 99 is an amazing piece of Victorian engineering. with its walk-to-work internals and cool little mechanism round counter on the receiver. But isn't that a little steampunk for someone who puts shotguns in polymer stock so they don't ever have to touch wood?
Sure. It's all true.
Just goes to show that the 1911 magic is finally rubbing off on you. What's next? A Schmidt Rubin? Maybe a Brown Bess musket? Or are you bucking for Ian's job on the Gun Nation?
The first time Ian was on, I sent an email to Doc right after the show and said, I don't know, Doc. I don't think I could be friends with this guy. And Doc's like, I know, right? It would cost you just way too much money. I'm like, no, Doc. He talks about the one genre of firearms that I just cannot stomach. And that's it. I haven't heard from Doc Wesson since. We used to have a little back and forth every once in a while. Nope.
Nope.
I think maybe I insulted him. I think Doc is quite fond of Ian, and rightfully so. Ian is a wonderful addition to that show. He makes Pierre Luc look like a savant, but no, savants do know a lot of stuff. Never mind.
You backpedal there, bud.
Yeah, whatever. This Ian guy knows a lot of stuff. But he knows a lot of stuff about guns that don't matter, so it's kind of like what Ian knows doesn't matter.
It's like being able to count 121 toothpicks in 4 seconds. It just doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter, yeah.
No,
he's, and actually, Ian also has a, it's not a YouTube channel, I don't think. You have to pay for the content. It's like internet TV. They're producing a show now that's a firearms show. You have to pay for it, but everybody who's watched it so far says it's definitely worth the money. So listen to the show, get to know Ian, and then look for that TV. Listen to Gun Nation.
If you're into Brown Besses and Schmidt Rubens, that is.
Yeah. I don't think Ian talks about anything that is less than 100 years old.
Well, the 1911 is still on the table, and that's all right.
Yeah.
All right, well,
no, the 1911, I think by Ian's standards, would be a modern firearm.
Yeah, that's new.
Yeah.
All right, so Spencer finishes off his email. He says, seriously, though, congratulations. The 99 is a fantastic rifle, way ahead of its time. I've got a 60s version and 308 that is accurate, beautiful, and a joy to shoot. But then again, I do plan on building a wood-stocked AR someday.
That's sacrilege.
Keep up the great shows. Spencer from Glockville, a.k.a. Smyrna? Smyrna.
Smyrna. Smyrna, yeah. Georgia.
It's not Smyrna at all.
No. It's anything but that.
Yeah.
Quick correction to 2 weeks ago when I discussed the firearm. The rifle, I got it from the friend of the family, and he's in his 70s now. It was his father's rifle, and the paperwork in the case is dated 1953. The story I told about the bullet hole through the station wagon, that wasn't him. That was his father. The first bullet ever fired out of that gun was fired through the floor of their family station wagon. Yeah.
Cool.
AD with the old lever action, yeah.
Yep.
So, it's quite old.
All right, then.
The next one?
Yes, from Mark. How would I get this one?
Please do.
Hi, guys. From Mark, I said, interesting show again today. What kind of grouse are you hunting there in NB? Here in MB, we have sharptail and ruffed. The ruffed are the stupid ones that stand in the middle of the road and think you can't see them. Those are the ones. Those are the ones we have here.
But our stupid ones are the spruce.
We have spruce and we have ruffed.
And I find the spruce are the ones that you can walk up to and kick.
Oh, yeah? I've only ever gotten one spruce my entire hunting career.
I got two. There was a picture of me holding one on the old CRR page with my 870 in the Spec Ops stock.
So I remember that.
They say that they taste stronger. The spruce grouse apparently tastes stronger than the rough grouse. I don't know.
That's what I experienced. I found that the spruce did have a gamier and stronger taste and smell to it. The ruffed I find quite mild and delicious.
Absolutely.
But anyway, he says, thanks for covering the self-defense story from Brandon. That one roughed up my feathers. I live about 45 minutes from there. I can't tell from the details of the story, but I doubt that the victim carried her defense too far. It was 3-on-1. My personal opinion is that the Brandon police just want people to call 911 and curl up into a ball, kind of like a ruffed grouse, I could go on, but I don't want to wreck the rest of my day. Have a great day. Keep up the good work. Great. Well, thank you, Brendan. We haven't heard any updates yet on that story, so we don't know what to tell you. I don't know if it... I don't have any details, so sorry. Can't help you there. But yeah, no, we shoot ruffed grouse and spruce grouse, like Trevor said, here in New Brunswick. So out there in Manitoba. I guess the sharp tail is just another... I don't know. I don't know much about the sharp tail grouse. I've never hunted them, so...
Chicken of the bush.
Yeah. They all are, aren't they?
As opposed to chicken of the cave.
Right, or chicken of the ditch.
Chicken of the ditch. Which one's that?
I don't know. What am I? I thought we were just making up names.
No, man. Chicken of the cave is a bat. Chicken of the bush is a partridge.
Oh.
And then everything else is a crow, right? You got your magnum
chicken
crow,
of the living room. That's the cat.
Yeah, that's house chicken.
House chicken. Come here, house chicken.
You know the crow categories, right?
Yes. There's the albino crows.
You're allowed to hunt crows, so everything is a crow.
That's
right. You got your burrowing crow, which is the groundhog.
Yeah.
You got your magnum crow, which is the raven. You got the albino crow, which is the seagull.
Sure.
You got your chirping crow, which is a chickadee or any other type of bird like that. Everything's a crow.
Everything's a crow. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. This last email comes to us from Ian. He says, "Good evening, gentlemen." And I use gentlemen loosely. Just kidding. "Glad to have you guys around. Playing the podcast is much better than what is on the radio here in Toronto." I've listened to the radio in Toronto. I don't want to toot my own horn, but you're absolutely right. On to my question. "I have an M&P 9, but I want to make the jump to a Glock 17. What is your opinion, G17 or G17C, the compensated version? Maybe one day I'll make it out there to take my black badge. Until then, keep up the good work. Ian, please don't use my last name."
Oh. That's a funny last name.
Right, that is a funny last name.
Can I go on this one?
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all...
Yeah, here's what you got to do there, Ian. Look, listen.
If you are thinking... Ian, if you're thinking IPSC, no to the compensator.
That's
okay, because that'll put you in open. Second, even for just everyday shooting...
No to the compensator.
Yeah, that's right. You don't need a compensated 9mm. They don't kick that much. Secondly, it's going to be way too loud.
Yes.
Third, shoot that thing as close to the end of legal light as you can and see what happens. And then picture the worst case scenario where you had to shoot that in the dark in your home at night.
Yeah, with no earplugs.
The flash, well, not only would it deafen you, it would blind you.
Yeah.
In a self-defense situation, not that we would ever recommend that you bear arms for self-defense because we're not lawyers and this podcast is for entertainment purposes only, but let's speak hypothetical terms here for a moment, shall we? It's the last firearm in the world you would want to shoot inside a dark house because it would not only deafen you, it would blind you.
Well, a flamethrower.
That's not a firearm.
Oh, you did say firearm.
I did. I prefaced it, if you will.
All right. Are rocket launchers considered firearms?
Sure.
What about a 50 cal, 50 BMG? I wouldn't want to shoot one of them in a house.
Fine.
I'd rather shoot a Glock 17 compensated than a 50 BMG. I'm just saying.
I'm out. That was the sound of a door slamming.
Sorry. Couldn't help it. I just can't help myself.
It's just not necessary. I think it's a novelty.
I think it is too, and in fact, I don't think it actually does a whole lot. You know, it might mitigate the muzzle flip a slight bit. I don't think it's going to do anything for recoil. There isn't enough there for it to hit.
That's what it does. It doesn't necessarily get rid of the perceived recoil. It will reduce the muzzle flip. It has to. I mean, you know, science dictates that it must reduce the muzzle flip. I mean,
even if it's not perceptible.
Right. Well, the gases are coming out the top of the barrel and pushing the barrel down.
Yeah, something has to go down. So, yeah. So, yeah, maybe very slightly. But, look, Trevor's right. Look, you can write that down. Second time.
Wow.
You don't need the compensated version. Just get the Glock 17. They don't really have that much muzzle flip to begin with. I mean, they have such a low bore axis that the gun is, you know, practically a part of your hand when you shoot it anyway. So, yeah, just get the regular one. Especially if you're going to shoot IPSC.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, Mr. Please Don't Use My Last Name. Thank you very much for sending in that email.
Yes, so, good to hear from you.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We love questions about guns and stuff, so we'll even answer them sometimes with some sort of seriousness. Not tonight. but yeah. we sometimes and will.
And we don't guarantee that we will be right, but we do guarantee that we will answer it.
Well,
I knew a guy like that at the AirTree Club. I said, listen, if you have any question you want an answer, go see that guy because he's always got an answer. I can't guarantee it'll be right, but he'll have an answer. If he doesn't know the answer, he'll make one up. I guarantee it.
Yep.
All right. Cool. So into a 5-star review.
You got it.
And not bad for somebody who doesn't have the notes open, right?
Pretty good. Too bad we don't have any 5-star review lined up.
It's almost like we did this 78 times.
It's like we did. Well, you've only done it, 74 times, I guess. Yeah. Oh, not that anybody's counting.
Like that? That's awful. So no new 5-star reviews?
I didn't. You know what? I actually did check last week, and I think there is a new one, but it takes me about 10 minutes to turn on my old computer to go find it, that maybe I'll put it in next week.
Okay.
So now, I think there is a new one up there. So we do appreciate that, and whoever you are, we will find out next week, and we'll put it in the show for sure.
Shout out.
I have a shout out to... Owen.
All right. Well, I'm going to shout out Stacy and Melissa.
Oh, well, aren't you just going after the ladies?
Well, they are awesome listeners, and they provide us with a lot of support and a lot of feedback. And
listen, I do have a shout out. I'm going to interrupt you because it doesn't matter what you say.
Carry on.
I can't help it. I'm laughing now. I have a shout out for Mr. Adriel Michaud. He was on the show last week. He wrote up a blog post about his chat with us and included some quotes. Trevor, did you like the quote that you included in that article?
I thought it was wonderful. And I have an Adriel story too.
Oh, do you? That's good.
Yeah. So I'm texting Jeff Reese from the Calgary Shooting Center, and if you don't shop there, you're a communist.
Right.
And guess that's who's in the store?
That's their tagline, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. It's right on top of the door.
Right.
Welcome to the Calgary Shooting Center. If you don't buy here, you're a communist.
Yeah.
Adriel was in the store talking to Jeff while about being on the show or something like that, or I happened to text in while Adriel was there, so it was kind of like, oh, that's a small world. Well, if that is all, we'll remind our listeners to join both of Canada's National Firearms Associations. They are the NFA and the CSSA. They're doing what they can to get things to happen like what's happening this week with the new legislation being tabled by Minister Blaney. These things, if we didn't have these groups pushing for change, there wouldn't be any change. Actually, there may in fact be change in the opposite direction because the gun lobby exists to help fight the gun control lobby. And there are lots of people getting behind the gun control lobby. So we need to get behind our people. They're there fighting for you. Join them both, whether you like their politics or not. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they only exist to help you get gun rights. So join them both. The more numbers they have, the more credibility they have. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook. Get over to iTunes and give us another 5-star review that we'll forget to read. And if you're looking for other great shows to listen to, there's a whole bunch out there except for The Unnamed Trucker.
Yeah, listen to that one. That one's just crazy.
That's, yeah. And so check out the Crusader Podcast Network. We're all on there, including The Unnamed Trucker from the Road Gunner Podcast. I suppose maybe you could give it a try, but don't like it.
Right.
And the Reno Viola Outdoor Radio Network has all kinds of great outdoor shows, which we're a proud member of that network. So get over there and check them out as well. That's the show for this week, folks. I'm Ron Burgundy. And on behalf of all of us here at the network, don't just have a good night. Have a slam fire night.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.